Well, now to efforts to try to reduce the appalling rate of ear disease, hearing loss, in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in Australia. It's well understood that chronic ear disease and the resulting deafness or loss of hearing is a major cause of social disadvantage. If a child can't hear, it's difficult to learn, it's difficult to gain an education or a job. And as my next guest will explain, it's no surprise that hearing loss is a serious problem for Indigenous people in prison and juvenile detention, quite striking rates. Kelvin Kong is Australia's first Aboriginal surgeon. He's an ear, nose and throat specialist who describes the situation as a pandemic of deafness. He's part of a group including surgeons, audiologists and Aboriginal medical service workers who are frustrated with the ongoing problem, and they're calling for a more coordinated and effective approach in dealing with ear health. Kelvin Kong, good morning and welcome.
Thank you so much for having me on the program.
Pleasure. Look, let's just get some facts, could we please, on this rates of otitis media, a middle ear infection that seems to be the main demon in causing hearing loss. How prevalent is it?
I think it's very hard to tell because the prevalence data is not very accurate because it's so different across the Australian landscape. But to try and put things into perspective in a world market is that we're talking about discharging ears or chronic suppurative otitis media being a bad problem at 4%. In some communities, we're talking it to be around 90-95%. So it's a huge problem in some of these communities, and it varies so much across there. But putting a prevalence data on something that is a medical disease or process doesn't really understand the process of the problem, which is the hearing loss, which you described so nicely.
So these are people with a glue ear, and like which a lot of, you know, my children had glue ear, but it never goes away. Is that it?
Absolutely. So everyone in Australia, all kids in Australia, experience this problem of otitis media or fluid within the ear. But when it's not treated and looked after, there are complications associated. And the most common complication that we're seeing in our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities is a perforation or a hole in the eardrum,
right.
And so all this pus just leaks out and leaks out and leaks out, not to mention the hearing loss associated with it.
And then as I read about it, in fact it's quite something to read about it, they just start to drift away at school, they just end up not concentrating because they can't hear, they then get categorised in a certain way, and on it goes.
It's really, really sad, and it breaks my heart. And I think the first thing I need to acknowledge is the resilience of the community and the resilience of these children that put up with this. The way we see it in our society is the educational impact, the unemployment, the economic impact on Australia, and particularly more recently with the juvenile justice system as well as the adult justice system, the amount of overrepresentation that occurs, particularly in hearing loss. And so if we're looking back, and I see these stories all the time and the different levels of the age process which is occurring, if you go back to these kids at 2-3 years of age and actually treat them at that stage and get them involved in the healthcare system, then I think would have a huge impact on the trajectory of these children's long term.
Is there any success happening at all with meeting it at the front end when kids are really little?
There are wonderful stories around Australia that work well. The newborn hearing screen is picking up a lot of sensory neural hearing loss, but I think one of the examples that I'm probably involved in is a program called the HEALS program, which is run out of New South Wales, and it's been trying to target funding specific for these kids who are enduring these kind of issues and making sure they get surgical services as well as speech pathology services nice and early and quickly.
Yes, that speech pathology part is very interesting because I read that if an Aboriginal child is suffering hearing loss at 12 months, speech development, for instance, is difficult. So you've got to hear those sounds being made. So this is the sort of thing you're talking about.
I think one of the problems that we've experienced in trying to talk with the jurisdictions is that there's different silos that occur. There are surgical silos, medical silos, education silos. And what we're really talking about, easier for your listeners, if you're talking about your own child and that child's not hearing well, what are the things that you need to make sure your child, your own child, gets the services it needs as well as the education it gets? So it's not necessarily going to be related to just surgical intervention. It may be related to hearing services, one-on-one speech pathology services, speakers in the classroom, impacts of discharging ear, medical impacts of that. So there's a whole plethora of things that need to be looked after. And the problem is that we're just looking at things sporadically or in a piecemeal process. And so one of the things we're really trying to champion for is how do we actually get everyone in the same room together and say, rightio, we all understand there's a problem here. There are some great programs that are working. There are also some programs that aren't working so well. How do we get on the same page and make sure that our children, you know, our future and our children today actually get what they need?
Now, I mean, we are talking about sort of facts and figures and the dreaded outcomes word, but you see, I understand, patients all the time who have hearing loss. Are there some cases that illustrate the problem particularly that you could tell us about?
Oh, there are many cases that I see that just break my heart, but there are also many stories I see which are good. And if I might start on the good stories first, there are many children I see that have glue ear or otitis media, and you correct this problem with things called grommets, which let all the fluid come out of the ear. And when the parents come back, they are just so happy and smiling. The kids are talking about hearing in classrooms, their speech is picked up, they're interacting a lot, and just some of the funny things they hear around the home, right through the other end of the spectrum where you're getting some kids. I had this poor 12-year-old child who had dreadful ear disease from a very, very early age, who's now starting to intervene with the juvenile justice system because at an early age had hearing loss, discharging ears, was put in the back of the classroom as a naughty kid, expelled from school intermittently, mixed with the wrong crowd. And you see that trajectory starting to pan out as I'm discussing that. And he's the most beautiful, polite, gentle child who just got mixed up in the wrong areas. Mm. And I'm just thinking, if you could actually meet him a bit earlier on and treat this, how different would his story be?
I must say, I did see a Guardian story recently, which was very disturbing, about a child in Newcastle in New South Wales, you know, hardly a remote community, who had maggots in their ear.
And it's not an uncommon situation. And the problem we have in Australia is that we're always associating ear disease or disease of poverty with the remoteness of Australia. And that's not necessarily the case. And in Newcastle, we've got the most amazing healthcare system right in our own back door. We're seeing these kind of illnesses that are occurring at such a disparaging rate, and this dichotomy that exists in the local communities is dreadful. And when you see that, it just breaks your heart to see a kid in Australia, in a major regional centre, with maggots in the ear. And, you know, I took a video of it off and show that when I'm talking to people in relation to this, but it's something that should not be happening. When you Google or look this up in the literature, you're talking about countries in Africa, Egypt, all these nations which have horrible health statistics. On our OECD nations, we are, you know, one of the top three nations in health, yet on our Aboriginal perspective, particularly with ear health, we're right down the bottom list. In fact, the World Health Organization have classified chronic suppurative otitis media or discharging ears in its own category in Aboriginal Australians because it's so bad. Now, that in itself is a testament to how poorly we're looking after this problem in our community.
And what fears do you have for that particular child in terms of his or her future, that child with the maggots? Because, I mean, I can't help but draw the conclusion that something terribly wrong in that family, that they didn't notice that.
And that's often what we do, is that we blame the family and blame the community rather than saying, well, hang on a second, let's change the way we think of things and say, well, what are we doing differently or what are we doing wrong which is not servicing the community? And there are many reports out there that talk about the way in which we're delivering healthcare services, but I think we need to challenge the way in which we're delivering healthcare services, particularly to the more vulnerable parts of the community. And obviously, when myself championing for Aboriginal health being a big part of that, that we're actually going to the community, the clinics, that we're going to talk to the healthcare workers, that we're engaging the community, the trajectory of the healthcare paradigm, that we're making sure there's priority lists and priority access to these people who need this kind of help, so that we change this. And even if you dislike Aboriginal health, even if you think this is not a real issue, purely from a taxpayer's point of view, you should be offended that we're spending money at the wrong end of the spectrum and not in the first part of life, where we can change someone's life expectation to be a real good, engaged contributor to Australian society.
So what can change then? I mean, what does the group that met in Canberra, I gather, with Ken Wyatt, the Assistant Minister for Health, and others, what were the suggestions that emerged from that meeting?
Well, the main thing that emerged from the meeting is that we acknowledge that there is an issue here in Australia. The second thing is that we want to make sure that all the work that's been done investigating and treating chronic ear disease needs to be acknowledged, and that we need to do this in a way which is coordinated, so that we look at existing efficacy of health services, that we look at community engagement, that we look at the way we're doing things at the moment, and actually make an approach which is, I guess, has a roadmap to it, so that we can start projecting what we're looking at in 5, 10, 15 years' time. But more importantly, that all these people who are frustrated, all these people who are involved in the healthcare system, and the resilience of the community can actually be met by the healthcare provision.
So, is there a sort of decent public education program underway for this? Because that's what I'm hearing from you too, that you have to almost educate people that there are ways of intervening in this. Because my recollection of a glue ear is it goes on and on and on, and you have to have stamina yourself to sort of get on top of it. It takes quite a lot of intervention actually by the parent.
Oh, absolutely. But I think it's again, acknowledging everyone needs to be aware of this. So a really good simple example that we talked about around the table is hearing loss in the juvenile justice system. We need to make sure that there is screening processes in place, as well as the carers in the institutions, to be able to pick up hearing loss and make sure that's addressed. So if you've got someone who's in a juvenile justice system, they're on the wrong side of what's been going on. They're not hearing properly. So if they're getting instructions and things are getting frustrated and they're just not hearing, then these things escalate, when in actual fact we should be de-escalating them, making sure they can hear so that then they can have that conversation that's required. So simple things like that where we need to engage all sectors, and it needs to be across all silos rather than just being purely an ear disease process.
Yes, I must say, in one recent study of the Darwin and Alice Springs Correctional Centres, they found a 94%, just a staggering figure, of Aboriginal inmates with significant hearing loss, and that it was just normalised, which was terrible to read. But once they've lost that hearing, what do you do? Like, they can never get that back, can they?
Well, the first and foremost is that if you're at that stage, we've probably missed the boat already. We need to be going well back in relation to that. But there's not hope lost for that. We need to correct the problem of the deficit, whatever that anatomical problem is, whether it's a perforation, as well as ensure that we have hearing habilitation through hearing aids, through speaker amplification systems, through education, all those kind of things need to be in place. But the other part of that, which you said quite well, is that it's normalised, that people think this is normal. One of the communities I visited, there was one kid with a normal eardrum, and everyone was gathered around the TV going, wow, what's that thing? It looked really weird. And every kid in the community had a perforation except one kid. God. And that one kid that did not have a perforation was this child of one of the teachers who was visiting the community. And they're all just fascinated with this kid just having a nice clear eardrum. And it was almost normalised that every kid had cotton wool in the ears because they would have pus running out of them all the time. And so this kid's running around without any cotton wool and they're going, why is he not wearing it when all of us have to wear it? And this is a bizarre concept for us to gather. And when we normalise that kind of behaviour, we're actually lowering our expectations of what we should be providing.
Yeah, well, that's something to hear. Professor Kelvin Kong, good luck to you. I hope, your moves produce some real change. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for chatting. Have a good day.
Associate Professor Kelvin Kong, an ear, nose and throat specialist, and part of a group of health workers trying to shift thinking and health spending on this terrible problem of ear disease in our Indigenous communities. So we'll keep an eye on that next year, and you might let us know of any good news that you hear on that score.
From the founder of Apple to comedian Andy Samberg, from the head of Netflix to the man who built the World Wide Web, from the creators of the record-breaking podcast Serial to startups that are breaking ground right here in Australia. If you want to hear from the movers and the shakers, media, technology and culture around Australia and the globe, there is literally one show. It also happens to be the most literally named show. Download this show with me, Mark Fennell. Media, technology, culture. Find it on the RN website now or on the ABC Radio app.